53. 6 minutes ago.
Howell Insurance,
a woman answered. I want to buy insurance, Nola blurted into her phone, sitting in the driver's seat, once again sketching in her notepad with the green pencil. She was drawing the woman on the phone based solely on her voice. Kurt. Trying to sound nice, but subtly annoyed. Someone who had no problem lying.
I'm sorry, all our agents are really busy right now. Can I take your number?
I can hold, Nola said, looking out the front windshield and down the block at the storefront that clearly had a light on but no movement inside. I'm a friend of Benjamin's, she added, reading the name from the front window. Get a piece of the rock with Benjamin R. Powell. The receptionist went silent.
Ben passed away in 2003.
Did I say Benjamin? I think I had the wrong guy, Nola said, noticing just how many people were headed to the nearby Safeway supermarket now that work was over. This late in the day, like any commercial block in Washington, it was a mix of faces, whites, blacks, Asians, the usual professionals in their usual professional wear. Underneath their coats was a fashion range that for women stretched from Banana Republic to Ann Taylor, and for men, Joseph A. Bank to Brooks Brothers. Still sketching away, she started drawing the coffee shop across the street, suddenly recalling the Native American woman with the long black ponytail. Nola looked for her. She was gone.
What did you say your name was again?
The receptionist challenged a bit too aggressively. I didn't, Nola replied, her green pencil no longer moving. She turned her attention down the block to the insurance agency. I appreciate the help. I'll call back later.
Ma'am, if you'll just tell me your name.
Nola shut the phone, eyes still on the storefront. Whatever was happening inside, there was only one way to find out. Time to go in. On the front dashboard was an open pencil tin. Nola tossed her green pencil inside and snapped the tin shut. From her waistband, she pulled out her gun, sliding it in her coat pocket. Nola started to elbow open the car door, and then, up on the next block, a man darted across the street. Balding. Close-cropped black hair. Fox-shaped face. Nola thought he looked familiar. He was carrying a briefcase, chewing gum like a teenager, and heading straight for Powell's insurance. Taking out her phone, Nola pulled up a photo. LinkedIn headshot. Same receding hairline. Same fox face. This was him. Perfect match. Last night on the boat, as Marcus begged for his life and pissed all over himself, he finally gave up his boss, or at least who he reported to. And now here he was, Foxface with the briefcase. Real name, Rowan Johansson, also known as Houdini, one of the few people who knew what Operation Blue Book really was, and who no question had a hand in putting down the Alaska plane that took Camille's life. Mungle, Faber, Stadler, Ticonderoga, Swan, Nola said to herself. She clenched her jaw so hard her teeth made an audible crack. Out the front windshield, Nola watched as Houdini glanced over his shoulder, taking one last look around. For a second, it looked like he was staring right at her. Mungle, Faber, Stadler, Ticonderoga, Swan. Deep down, Nola secretly hoped she'd been spotted. Then her next move would be easy. But the way the bill of her cap was blocking her face, plus the fading light, no way could he know she was here. Down the block, convinced he was alone, Houdini switched his briefcase to his left hand and used his right to tug open the front door of the insurance place, right-handed. The door was old, heavy. It slapped shut behind Houdini as he disappeared inside. Nola counted to herself. One. Two. Kicking open her car door, Nola crossed the street at mid-block. In her pocket, she gripped her gun. Mungle, Faber, Stadler, Ticonderoga, Swan. Like before, it wasn't helping. Though sometimes that wasn't a bad thing.
54. 6 minutes ago. You still see him?
He's there. I see him,
Sig whispered, ducking down by the steering wheel as Houdini turned the corner diagonally across the street. He was heading away from Zig.
I assume he can't see you?
Dino asked through the phone. It was an absurd question, making Zig wonder if looping Dino in was a mistake. Naturally, Zig tried Wags first, but for the past half hour, Wags was nowhere to be found. At least with Dino, Zig had extra eyes and ears, as well as someone to pull the emergency cord if it all went bad.
What about the old magician?
Dino asked. Any word from the amazing Caesar?
I called. He didn't pick up,
Zig whispered.
You sure he's okay?
I told you he didn't pick up.
You should still check in on him. Even if he was feeling guilty, this guy Caesar put his life at risk for you. Make sure he's okay.
I will. Zig cut himself off. Diagonally across the street, Houdini paused at the front door of an insurance shop, checking over his shoulder. Zig scooched down slightly, but otherwise didn't move, didn't say a word. Houdini tugged on the door and stepped inside, disappearing.
I gotta go,
Zig said.
Stop, tell me where Houdini is.
Insurance place, Prudential. I need you to look it up, see who owns it.
Ziggy, don't be stupid. Stay where you are. You have no idea what you're walking into.
This guy knows what Operation Blue Book is. He's the one. That's the reason the plane crashed in Alaska.
Whatever this Blue Book thing is, you don't even know if this is part of it.
He took 7 lives, Dino. Innocent lives, Zig hissed with a guttural roar, spit flying from his lips. Dino went silent, knowing that tone in his friend's voice. A tone last heard on that night when Zig made the poor choice of taking on a 6'4" Marine who was screaming in the parking lot and gripping the arm of his sobbing girlfriend. When Zig jumped in, even the girlfriend turned on Zig, shouting that he should mind his own damn business. The Marine did far more damage, fracturing Zig's eye socket. Still, Zig wouldn't stop swinging, even as the blood turned the sclera of his eye completely red. Only later in the emergency room did Dino realize it was the night of what would have been Zig's 20th wedding anniversary.
Ziggy, you're picking the wrong fight here. Let me call the cops.
Zig barely heard the words. Reaching for the door handle of the car, he looked outside and...
Mother trucker,
Zig muttered. Down the street, a new person got out of their own car as Houdini entered the insurance place. Her head was down. But even under whatever baseball cap she was wearing, there was no mistaking her stark white hair.
Nola,
Zig blurted.
Nola? Where?
Dino asked through the phone.
She's there?
Mm-hmm, Zig said, his hand still on the door handle. Staring through the windshield, he felt like he was watching her on TV. Her head was down and her back was to Zig, so she couldn't see him. But the way she was moving... like the best soldiers on a sneak. Small steps, each one slow and careful. She knew exactly where she was going. She wasn't the only one. In a single smooth movement, Nola pulled open the door and stepped into the insurance place. Yet as the door swung shut, a brand new figure stepped out of the crowd, just outside the Safeway, across from the coffee shop. Another woman, Native American, wore a hunting jacket, a black one with loads of pockets. Even from here, her walk stood out. The same slow and careful steps. Military training, for sure.
What the crap is going on?
Zig whispered. He had no idea she was called the Curtain. But he knew a threat when he saw one. The woman stopped near the corner, still a block and a half away. Zig squinted through the dark. Unlike Nola, who was small and compact, this woman was wide-shouldered.
Ziggy, tell me what the hell is happening,
Dino insisted.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Taking her time as she crossed the street, the big Native American woman looked around, scanning every inch of the grid that soldiers are trained to examine. Zig leaned forward even more in his seat, squinting as she crossed the street and made her way toward the insurance agency. No question. Her posture was perfect, but the way her left shoulder looked higher than her right one, She was carrying something under her field coat. She's wearing a strap for a gun. Or something worse, Sig blurted. You don't know that. The woman approached the front door of the insurance agency. Unlike Nola, she paused, standing there in the cold, scanning the block one final time. Then she disappeared inside. They're ambushing her, Sig said. This isn't your fight. Don't do something stupid. Kicking open the car door, Sig hopped outside. The wind was cold, scratching at his face. Ziggy, I'm calling the cops. They'll be there in minutes. She'll be dead by then, Sig barked, already across the street. He stuffed his phone in his pocket, though he didn't hang up. If things went upside down, at least Dino could be a witness. Ziggy, you haven't seen this girl for years, Dino shouted, though Sig couldn't hear it. Running full speed, Sig darted for the insurance shop. Get a piece of the rock with Benjamin R. Powell, he read to himself as he caught his breath. His right hand gripped the knife in his pocket. His left gripped the door handle. Swallowing hard, Sig gave the door a tug and stepped inside. 55. 6 minutes ago. Houdini hated it here. Hated the way the whole insurance agency reeked of stale cigarettes, carpet fresh, and mediocrity, but hated even more that it reminded him of his grandparents' place. Evening, darling. How can I— The middle-aged receptionist called out, cutting herself off. She had braces and a tattoo that read Cha-Cha vertically down her forearm. Looking up from her cell phone, she spotted Houdini, then looked right back down, just like she was paid to. You got scissors? Houdini asked, approaching her desk. Pardon? Scissors. You know, scissors. From a neon orange pencil cup, the woman pulled out a pair of scissors, keeping her eyes down as she handed it over. Muchas gracias, Houdini said, standing there and chewing his gum for an extra half a second, as if he were waiting for her to say something back. She knew better than that. Picking up speed as he headed for the back of the office, Houdini made a quick left, then right, navigating a small hub of cubicles, all of them empty. For months now, after each package pickup, Houdini came here, to the back of Powell Insurance, to this frosted glass door and its big 80s-era half-moon door handle that looked like a frown. Yanking it open, he revealed a wide conference room with a formica oval table at the center and a built-in kitchen along the left-hand wall. The refrigerator door was propped open. It was clearly unplugged, filled with file boxes. On the oval table were two dirty ashtrays, as well as the most valuable thing in this entire shithole, an ancient corded telephone. Time to tell the man in charge. In the current world of high-tech surveillance, where the government can access everything from your internet-connected doorbell to the microphone in your Wi-Fi-enabled cable box, it's not that hard to trace a cell phone. So the safest way to make a private call these days is to use the one technology even the government doesn't have the manpower to check anymore, a plain, old-fashioned landline. Malvina, I dial a 9 first, then a 1, Houdini shouted at the wall, which was covered with awful landscape paintings in gaudy gold frames. At the head of the table were 4 wall clocks, all in a row, labeled London, Tokyo, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., though they were all now stopped, showing 4 incorrect times. 9, then 1, the receptionist shouted back. Letting the phone ring, Houdini tossed the briefcase on the conference table. The padlock was still in place. The zipper wouldn't budge. Time to find out what was inside. Cradling the receiver with his chin, Houdini gripped the scissors like a knife and plunged it into the side of the soft leather briefcase. Slicing down, he made the hole wider and wider until... Click. Someone picked up. Talk, a man with a wood chipper of a voice insisted through the phone. Houdini rolled his eyes. I'm not hired help. You sure about that? You're a dick. Spit your gum out. Makes you sound like a child. Houdini made a patoo noise, though he didn't spit the gum out. Our magician friend, he finally said, referring to the amazing Caesar, is not feeling so good. What about the most recent present? He's a clueless old dinosaur, had no idea where it came from. But I'm telling you, someone's stepping in our shit. We need to... Houdini said, wedging his fingers into the side of the cheap leather briefcase and tearing the small hole wider. Inside, as always, was money. Bundles of cash. But instead of being green, it looked royal blue. Almost purple. Across the front was a picture of Muhammad Ali Jinnah, the founder of Pakistan. These weren't dollars. They were rupees, Houdini said. Pakistani money. It made no sense. Their deliveries were always in U.S. dollars, one or two times in Iraqi dinars. If someone was sending new currency... Bitch of a bitch, Houdini blurted, pulling out a stack of cash and flipping through it. A 1,000 Pakistani rupee bill was on top, but the rest of the pile was... All of it was blank. It's blue construction paper, Houdini said. He flipped through the rest. All three stacks were the same. All of it worthless. This wasn't a delivery. It was a trap. You need to get out of there. Houdini glanced over his shoulder. Through the frosted glass, the secretary went to stand up, then sat back down, like she was talking to someone who just arrived. You need to get out of there, the man repeated. Let me just get out of there, now. Houdini slammed the receiver down, but just as he turned, phoom, the glass door flew open. Nola stormed inside, her gun pointed at Houdini's head. You must be Roan. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You have the wrong... They call you Houdini. Your real name is Roan Johansson. You're from Scottsbluff, Nebraska. I don't know what you're talking about. Nola pulled back the hammer on her gun, aiming it at his forehead. I'm now going to shoot you in the face. You have 3 seconds to prevent it. Your boss. I don't have a boss. Call him whatever you want. You're too stupid to do this yourself. So that person you were just talking to, she said, her finger tightening around the trigger. Tell me where he is.
56. He was too calm. That was Nola's first thought.
Take a breath, I'm not your enemy, Houdini said, chewing his gum, his hands raised casually in the air.
He wasn't sweating, seemed unafraid. Maybe just dumb.
You know who I am? Nola challenged, her gun still pointed at his face. Nola, the one who died.
The one you tried to kill.
Not me.
Wrong guy, Houdini said, lowering his chin and offering a conspiratorial grin, like they were on the same side. He was a charmer, a natural salesman, like a lawyer but with less polish. She eyed his gum chewing. More street smart than book smart. He wasn't a dummy, though. Deep crow's feet were in the corner of his right eye. His left eye was clean. That's his aiming eye. A hunter, definitely right-handed. He chewed some more, short, quick bites. Impatient? Annoyed? Anxious? No. He kept on chewing, his grin never leaving his eyes. In control, like he knew what was coming. Nola glanced over her shoulder, turning toward the door. Too late. Gah! She never saw the person behind her. An arm wrapped around her neck as 4 metal blades, like a metal paw, pressed hard against her throat.
Your day is about to take a noticeable turn for the worse,
the tall Native American woman whispered.
Nola Brown, Houdini said, still chewing his gum as he stood there on the carpet linoleum border between the conference room and kitchenette. I want you to meet our dear friend, the In a burst, the glass door to the conference room shattered, bits of aqua shards spraying everywhere. A metal rolling chair was still in midair, thrown through the door by... Zig raced into the room as the metal chair somersaulted, colliding into the curtain, catching her off balance.
Don't move! She goes down, you go down! Zig shouted, jamming the tip of his knife into the back of the curtain's neck. She started to turn, but he wedged it in there, through her black field jacket. This is your C7, he told her, pushing his knife between her sixth and seventh vertebrae. That's what protects your spinal cord. If you ever want to move your arms or walk again, you need to let go of her. Tell Nola to drop her gun, the curtain challenged, her claw weapon still at Nola's throat. Nola didn't budge, her gun still aimed at Houdini. Everyone take a breath, Zig said. Nola, listen to the man, Houdini warned, amping up the charm as he backed up a few steps into the kitchenette. Put your gun down or you're gonna get your throat slit. No one's slitting anyone's throat, Zig insisted. Put the gun down, Nola, Houdini repeated, chewing his blam. Nola pulled the trigger, shooting Houdini directly in the throat. 57. Homestead, Florida, 10 years ago. This was Nola when she was 16.
What's wrong?
Nola asked, clearly anxious. Ms. Sable laughed. Can you just close your eyes and stop worrying? Sitting across from Ms. Sable at the wide art table, Nola closed her eyes, but she couldn't stop worrying. Not after that night a few years back when Royal covered her eyes. They closed? Ms. Sable asked. Nola nodded, hearing her teacher rummage through her purse. Fwap. Something hit the wooden table. Open. Nola opened her eyes, staring down at a rectangular box the size of a brick. It was covered in Muppet wrapping paper that featured Fozzie, Miss Piggy, and of course Kermit, in the middle of a celebratory Kermit flail. A present. I'm a crappy wrapper. The paper is all we had left from when Dominic was little, Ms. Sable explained, referring to her son. Nola looked at it like someone took a dump on the desk.
Why would... What's this for?
This weekend was your birthday, wasn't it? I believe that entitles some of us to say, happy birthday. Nola fidgeted with the cuffs on the jean jacket she'd bought at Goodwill on Ms. Sable's recommendation. Girls shouldn't be walking around in wife-beater tank tops. Nola still wore the tank underneath, but every day she wore the jacket.
Miss Sable.
When someone gives you a present, say, thank you.
But you...
Try it, okay? Thank you.
Thank you,
Nola repeated, unable to look up at her teacher. Miss Sable opened her mouth, ready to lecture her about eye contact, but it was her birthday. Tearing at the wrapping paper and opening the narrow box, Nola was hit by the smell first. Her favorite smell over these past few months. Freshly sharpened
pencils. Cool,
Nola said, revealing half a dozen professional quality pencils, each in its own pristine plastic case. It's not much. Teacher's salary, Miss Sable said. But you know, for sketching. Nola nodded, flashing a hint of the ruined smile that always broke Miss Sable's heart. Like Nola was afraid to commit to a full grin, or didn't know how.
They're all different,
Nola said. That's the point. As you know, the number on the side is their lead grade, and a 4B is softer than a 2B. Each has a different touch, like a different brush. When I bought Dominic his first baseball mitt, this handsome guy at the Sports Authority told me it all started with the right equipment. That's how he got me wasting $50 for a glove for a kid who hated baseball. Anyway, there you go. Now you have it. The right equipment. For the rest of her life, Nola would come back to this moment, relishing it, thinking about it, replaying it in her head. In the next few months, when Nola's life imploded and her soul was ripped to shreds, she'd need this day more than ever. Leaning down toward the box, she'd never seen anything so beautiful. She hesitated on the word, but that was the right one. Beautiful. Over and over, she reread the names of all the different pencils. Mungo, Faber, Stadler, Ticonderoga, and Swan.
Just you wait. You haven't even seen part two yet, Ms. Sable said, darting to her office, a small closet in the back corner of the art room. She ran like an athlete, Nola thought, realizing for the very first time how little she knew about Ms. Sable's life outside of school. There was some whispering, like Ms. Sable was talking to someone. "Close your eyes," Ms. Sable called out. This time, Nola didn't hesitate. "Nola, just so you know, this is a potential gift. You don't have to take it, okay? Only if your dad says it's fine." Nola nodded, eyes still shut and so excited she didn't even hear the mention of Royal. "Okay. Open. Look." On the art table was a cardboard box, big enough that it could hold an old computer monitor. The box wasn't wrapped, wasn't even closed. Something moved inside, scratching wildly. Something alive. "I'm warning you, you don't have to take this. It's my son's, and he's leaving for... He enlisted in the army, God bless him. They're gonna pay for his college. He says he'll eventually ask to be stationed at the base here," she said, referring to the nearby Homestead Air Reserve base. "Anyway, he's my different one, never on the conventional path. So when he said he couldn't take pets with him, well..." "Happy birthday, part two," Miss Sable said, quickly adding, "if you want it." Nola lunged forward, ruined smile on her face. "Here, let me introduce you," Miss Sable said, reaching into the box and pulling out... It had elegant black fur and a red bow taped to its collar. It looked like a cat, but as the light hit it...
"A skunk?"
"Before you judge, it's been de-scented," Miss Sable explained. "So no stink bombs, no rotten smell. Don't ask how we got him, my son's idea. But he's been with us for 4 years now. They act like cats, though. Eat cat food, use a litter box, they just look like, well, like this." Nola stared at the skunk as it gracefully prowled across the art desk, cocking its head sideways at Nola. A skunk. Even Nola knew this was weird. Another thing for her classmates to point at. Another thing to make fun of. Another thing to make her different.
"Does she have a name?"
"El Duque. I think it's the name of an old baseball player, though we call him Dooch. She's a he." Nola stood there a moment.
"I want him,"
she decided, pulling Dooch close into a hug. Dooch relished the touch, rubbing his cheek against Nola's arm. He didn't smell at all, and he moved just like a cat. "Nola, there's something in everyone that's beautiful. Your job is to unlock it. That sounds like a yoga quote, but it's gospel." Nola nodded, not realizing how soon she'd need those words. It would be one of the most important lessons of her life. "I'm glad this is gonna work out," Ms. Sable added. "Just make sure it's okay with your dad."
58. Washington, D.C. Today. The bullet hit Houdini in the center of his esophagus. He was still in mid-chew, still grinning at Nola, as a small black bullet hole appeared in his neck. He tried clearing his throat. It was filled with blood. He grabbed his own neck, his body lurching backward against the sink in the kitchenette. It helped him keep his balance until his eyes went wide, then rolled backward too. His legs buckled. Nola knew what came next. He hit the linoleum like a discarded marionette, blood pouring from his throat. "Nola, are you nuts?" Sig yelled. "How could you?" The curtain spun backward, her claw no longer at Nola's neck as she elbowed Sig in the face, just like Nola gambled she would. Whoever the curtain was, she was a pro. Her top priority would always be self-preservation. It was a risk Nola had to take. If she didn't shoot Houdini, she and Sig would already be... "Phew!" Sig groaned, stumbling sideways, slipping on the shattered glass, blood pouring from his nose. The curtain didn't let up. Storming toward Sig, she sliced at his hand, her metal claws tearing his skin and sending his knife flying. But as the curtain was about to learn, there's a cost to turning your back on Nola. Without a breath of hesitation, Nola raised her gun, aimed it at the back of the curtain's head, and pulled the trigger. Blam! A tall panel of frosted glass, next to where the door used to be, shattered from the stray bullet. Nola was surprised by her own miss. The curtain was fast, especially for someone her size. Nola raised her gun again, same spot, back of the curtain's head. In a blur, the curtain spun with a roundhouse kick aimed at Nola's gun. Nola saw it coming, but she had to give the curtain credit. Whoever this woman was, she was a brawler. Well-trained, too. The roundhouse kick wasn't karate or taekwondo. Jeet Kune Do, Nola decided, noticing the way the curtain's legs swept like a hook. She was going for speed, not power. Not that it had helped the curtain here. Nola put up a blocking elbow. She had to use her shooting hand, had to move her gun. The curtain grinned, snapping her kick. Nola stood her ground, absorbing the impact and realizing half a second too late that the hook kick was just a distraction. A setup for the curtain to get close enough to... With a swipe of her hand, the curtain sank her metal claws deep into the inside of Nola's wrist, slicing it open. Nola made a noise, a groan, but she wouldn't cry out, even as the blood trickled toward her elbow. Dumb, Nola cursed herself. Should have seen that coming. In the distance, she heard the faint sound of sirens. The police were still blocks away. But as Nola felt her own heartbeat pulsing in her ears, she could hear everything. Like every noise in the universe was suddenly isolated and... There. Another sound. Coming from the front of the office. Someone sobbing. The receptionist was under her desk, crying. When the world sounds like this, Nola knew she was going into shock. Nola tried holding tight to her gun. Don't let it go. But the pain. Forget the pain. Put it away. She'd been in worse fights. She thought of Royal and the friends he brought home, the things they'd say. She'd put the pain of those nights away. She'd bury this too. Looking down, Nola clutched the gun with everything she had. But there was nothing in her hand. The gun had fallen to the floor. Barely 3 seconds had passed. Gripping her own bleeding wrist, Nola fought to stay on her feet. A few feet away, Zig was still on the ground, bleeding from his nose and finally getting his bearings. Barely 3 more seconds had passed. You have about 4 minutes before you pass out, the curtain said, picking up Nola's gun, admiring the weight. Approximately 6 minutes until you hemorrhage. Pressing her lips together, the curtain grinned at her own victory. Then aimed the gun at Nola's chest and gripped the trigger. This is for making me drink that shitty coffee. No! Zig screamed, fighting to get up. Blam! Nola intentionally turned toward the bullet. Instead of hitting Nola in the chest, the bullet burrowed just below her collarbone. She was still clutching her own wrist, the blood seeping between her fingers as the world went blurry, then black. Her last thought was about the color of her own blood and how it looked in this green fluorescent light. It gave the crimson a hint of purple. There was a color just like that on the color wheel. It was called Carmen, she finally remembered as she fell to the floor just shy of the conference table. Storming toward her, the curtain leaned down over Nola's unconscious body and pressed the barrel of the gun to the side of Nola's head. Her finger tightened around the trigger and... Fuh! The curtain roared in pain as Zig plunged his knife through her field jacket and deep into the back of the curtain's shoulder blade. The knife was halfway in when it hit bone. Zig gave it a sharp twist, widening the wound, which made the curtain drop her gun. It was a move he learned from the dozens of fallen service members who'd been ambushed in hand-to-hand attacks and whose rounded gashes he'd stitched up so many times. Zig thought the pain would make her pass out. He couldn't be more wrong. You're fucking dead, the curtain boomed, still on her feet, her back to him as she thrashed and swung wildly. To protect himself, Zig had to let go of the knife, which was still in her shoulder. Thrusting her elbow, then a backward headbutt, she clipped him in the gut, then the chin. Her metal claw scratched at his leg. It was like he was standing behind a wild bull and trying to hold it in a headlock. Enough, Zig said, still directly behind her. His chest bumped into her back as he gripped her neck and dug his fingers above the hollow of her throat. The more he pressed into her larynx, the harder it was for her to breathe. The curtain gasped, still violently thrashing, still trying to stab him with her claw. He held his arms straight out to keep her away. Outside, in the distance, the sirens were getting louder. Sig squeezed even harder. The knife was still sticking out of the curtain's shoulder. She tried to reach for it, tried to grab at him. Zig tightened his grip as she shoved herself backward. Her ponytail hit Zig in the face. Zig squeezed even tighter. Within seconds, the curtain's movements slowed down, her arms sagging to her sides. No, not to her sides. She reached for something in her army coat, in the lower left pocket. A gun? Another claw? Tung. The round metal object hit the floor, rolling like a wobbly egg toward Nola's lifeless body. It was a grenade. Dangling from the curtain's middle finger was the pin. 59. Oh, shit. The curtain slumped sideways, nearly unconscious. The trigger, the metal lever on the side of the grenade, was at Zig's feet. No question. It was live. Oh, shit. Outside, the sirens were shrieking loudly. The police. If they ran in now. Nola, get up! Zig shouted. She didn't move. Didn't look like she was even breathing. She was turned on her side in a puddle of glass shards and blood, still lifelessly holding her own wrist. Zig dropped to his knees next to her, looking for a pulse. Her skin was gray, but her chest. She was breathing. He tried to lift her. There wasn't time. Back at Dover, grenade injuries were a regular occurrence. Once the pin was pulled and the trigger got loose, the delay fuse on a grenade was barely 5 seconds. 4, 3. The sirens were screaming. The police were pulling up. Behind Zig, someone was coughing. The curtain. She was awake, hunched over and down on all fours, air now filling her lungs. The knife was still sticking out of her back, reminding Zig of the sword in the stone. The curtain turned toward him. Now, she coughed, her dark eyes on Zig. We all die together. No, asshole, Zig said. Just you. Springing to his feet, he kicked the grenade back toward the curtain, then threw all of his weight onto the wide side of the conference table, tipping it toward himself and Nola. The table landed on its side with a chump. Zig gave it another tug, letting momentum do the rest. As the table flipped upside down and toward them, Zig pounced on Nola, covering her body with his own. The table slammed him from behind, sandwiching them together. Zig shut his eyes and started praying, the same prayer he'd been saying far too often lately. Magpie, I hope I'm wrong about the afterlife, because I really can't wait to see you. 2, 1. Zig's final thought was a fleeting one, about how grenades work, by projecting bits of metal into vital organs, and hoping that if his body got sent to Dover, Louisa would be the one to embalm him rather than Will. Because Will was a jerk-off. Zig shut his eyes, holding tight to Nola and pressing his forehead against hers. And then, nothing. Silence. He gave it another few seconds. Still nothing. Opening his eyes, Zig glanced over his shoulder. From his angle down on the ground, the slanted table gave him only a small triangular view of the conference room, which was covered in glass. He shoved the table slightly so he... There, on the floor, right where he kicked it. The grenade. It was just sitting there, fully intact. Confused, Zig gave the heavy table a shove, pushing it aside. The curtain and Houdini, both of them, gone. Mother trucker, the grenade. It was fake. Dumb old man, he scolded himself. So stupid to fall for such an easy distraction. Along the floor, there was a trail of blood that led to the back of the office, past the kitchenette. There was a click as the fire door slapped shut. When the curtain left, she was carrying Houdini's body. Maybe Zig could still catch her. Certainly he could. But only if he left Nola. If Zig were smart, he'd run right now, Leave Nola to the cops. They'd get her the medical attention she needed. And they'd also start asking questions, which would cause a brand new set of problems. Sig thought back to the magic shop, to what the old magician Caesar had said about the big move covering the small one. Whatever Operation Blue Book was doing with those suitcases full of money, someone in the military was making really big moves to keep this all quiet. It was the same with... Who was that woman? The Native American. No rank, ribbons, or name tag on her army jacket. That's how Uncle Sam goes in when they don't want to risk being traced to a particular mission. If she's active military, big moves were definitely happening. That's why Colonel Sue, Master Guns, and everyone else at Dover were suddenly working double time to see why Zig was so interested in this case. So why was Zig so interested? He stared down at Nola on the ground, her head awkwardly sagging sideways. To the untrained eye, she looked like a corpse, but Zig knew. The dead have a stillness and weight that can't be replicated. Nola was alive, and if everyone on the other side was active military, there was only one way to keep her that way. "I got you," he whispered, scooping Nola into his arms. He grabbed her gun, too, just in case. As he lifted Nola, her white hair flowed away from her face, revealing the scarred and jagged edge of her left ear. Zig was embarrassed by how good it made him feel.
Get off me, Nola growled, her words slurring, her eyes still closed. I don't need your help.
Zig ignored her, eyeing the wound below her collarbone. Clean hit. Even if the bullet was still inside, that was good. Meant it could be stitched. The sirens outside were deafening. There was a screech of brakes. The cops were arriving. Zig headed toward the back door, cradling her as he kicked it open and darted out into the cold. He glanced around. The alley was wide, big enough for a truck, but completely empty. Thank God it was dark.
Mongol, Faber, Statler, Ticonderoga,
Nola mumbled. Ticonderoga? That a person or a place? Nola shook her head, blinking herself awake and wincing in pain.
You better be able to stitch me together, she muttered.
60.
Caesar, we got problems.
No one answered.
Caesar, get out here! I need help!
Zig shouted, bursting into the magic shop. He had left Nola lying across the back seat of his car, floating in and out of consciousness.
I need a first aid kit, and a sewing kit if you've got it.
Zig made it all the way to the front counter before he noticed the smell. The smell he knew so well from Dover. The coppery stench from when a body was still fresh. The smell of blood.
Caesar, if you're about to jump out wearing a gorilla mask, please do it.
On Zig's right, down one of the aisles, he spotted a small dark puddle seeping from the foot of one of the bookcases, coming from the aisle behind it. Zig's chest felt like it was hollowed out with a metal rake. He ran to the next aisle. The puddle was larger there. At eye level, a shelf filled with bendable magic wands and rubbery pencils was sprayed with bits of meat and bone. The words, "Kids Section," were handwritten on a laminated index card that was taped to the top. Along the floor, a long smear of blood ran down the aisle and turned the corner, like someone had dragged the body away, or was still dragging it. Zig reached into his pocket, putting his hand on Nola's gun. He was tempted to yell a warning, something to scare them off. But the truth was, whoever was here, Zig didn't want to scare them off. Cocking the gun and gripping the trigger, Zig walked quickly down the aisle, sticking to the left to keep himself off the overhead camera. On the opposite side of the store, the mounted Bozo the Clown head kept watch. The smear of blood across the tile veered around the corner, then beelined toward the store's back room, where the door was propped open. Zig looked up, eyeing the ceiling. He could still see the mounted Bozo the Clown. But unlike the front of the store, there were no cameras back here. Whatever business Caesar did in the back room, he didn't want records of it. More important, whoever was back there now, they wouldn't see Zig coming. On three, Zig told himself, pausing just outside the threshold. He held his breath and gripped the trigger.
One. Two. Darting inside, Zig pointed his gun. The wide storage room was just as he had left it. Stacks of cardboard boxes, egg crates filled with old magic tricks, but otherwise empty. Along the floor, the smear of blood veered to the left, to Caesar's tiny office. Sticking out of the open doorway were the legs of an old man dressed in slacks and orthopedic black shoes. No, 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 Zig muttered. Zig raced to the amazing Caesar's side. The back of his head was a wet mess of hair and exposed bone. He was face down in a pool of his own. The blood was everywhere, on his chair, on the handles of the desk drawers. There was even a perfect red handprint, like a kindergarten painting on the leather blotter on his desk. Caesar wasn't dragged here. He crawled on his own. At Dover, Zig had seen it dozens of times. On the battlefield, a soldier with a missing jaw and no legs, crawling 2 miles back to his base, just so he could die in his own bed. No one fights harder for life than the dying. Zig re-examined the blood on the chair, the desk, even the blotter. So what made Caesar crawl all the way here? Zig turned the body over. A spit bubble, tinted red with blood, popped at Caesar's lips. He was breathing. Caesar! Caesar, can you hear me? The old magician didn't move, though his eyes were still open, dilating in the light. His skin was gray, like an elephant. He didn't have long. Caesar, if you hear me, blink! He didn't blink. He just stared up at Zig, peaceful as could be. There was no fear on his face. He knew what was coming. Zig went to say something, then noticed. Caesar was clutching something in his hand. It was square and silver, a picture frame. He was holding it to his chest. This is what Caesar crawled back for. Who's this? This you? Zig asked, tugging on the frame. Caesar nodded with his eyes, but wouldn't let go. The frame was smeared in blood, but Zig could still make out the image. A muted color photograph from the 80s, of an elderly couple on a cruise ship. The man's hair was thicker and darker, but it was clearly Caesar, his arm draped around the woman's waist. It was the pose from every cruise ship photo, right down to them standing in front of a round life preserver with the name of the ship on it, SS Sea Dream, from the looks of it. Caesar was a bruiser back then, a rhino stuffed into a Hawaiian shirt. But God, the way his mouth was open in mid-laugh, did he look happy? Your wife? Zig asked, now picturing his own ex-wife, in a similar photo she and Zig took decades ago, on a riverboat in New Orleans for his 30th birthday. Would Zig crawl back through his house just to get one last look at the photo? He knew the answer.
The plane,
Caesar sputtered, his face ruled by sadness. That wasn't your fault. You couldn't have known. Caesar shook his head.
I knew he was.
He fought to get the words out.
Told you Houdini was a shitbag.
This is because of me. I had you give him the bag. This is my fault, Caesar.
I'm so sorry.
Caesar shook his head again. He tried to say something, but the words wouldn't come. He looked angry now. No, not angry. Frustrated. Then irritated. Then terrified. Then full of despair. His emotions galloping. It reminded Zig of the hospital all those years ago. When someone's dying, their face betrays every thought. Their filter gone, their eyes like a flipbook of passions and sentiments, each fully formed thought a bolt of electricity whistling through their synapses. On your deathbed, life may very well pass before your eyes, and so does your reaction to it. Caesar's breathing slowed. His skin was grayer, looking like putty, and then he started to smile. Began to laugh. Another bubble formed at Caesar's lips.
Before he shot me,
Caesar swallowed hard.
I saw it had GPS.
What had GPS? I don't understand.
Special forces. They all have. So they can track. I saw it on him when he took the bag, the old magician insisted, reaching into his pocket. His hand was shaking as he pulled it out and revealed what would be his final magic trick. The item dangled from his crooked finger. I stole the fucker's watch.
61. Homestead, Florida. 10 years ago. This was Nola when she was 16.
You're shitting me. A damn skunk?
Royal asked.
It's de-scented. He's like a cat.
It's a fucking skunk.
Look at him. It's like a cat. Like a cat,
Nola said, as the skunk did infinity loops around her legs, its tail lingering in the air.
I thought you liked cats,
Nola added. Royal did like cats. He'd never admit it, but Nola saw the way he'd kneel down and do kissy lips whenever their neighbor's pet, a fat and snooty ginger cat named Tubbs, sauntered into their front yard.
He's cute, Royal blurted.
I know, right?
Royal was down on one knee, rubbing his fingers together to call the skunk close.
When I was little, I wanted a cat so bad,
he explained, the skunk now nuzzling against his fingers.
My mother would never let me have one.
What about your dad?
Royal looked up, flashing Nola a... She'd never seen this look before. More than sadness, there was sorrow on his face. Profound sorrow. That was the last time she'd ever asked Royal about his dad. They both turned back to the skunk.
Where will it poop?
Nola held up the litter box that Ms. Sable gave her.
In here. Like a cat,
Nola said for the fourth time.
His name is Dooch.
Royal eyed the litter box, then Dooch. He was unreadable, even to Nola.
I'm not calling him that.
You don't have to.
And I'm not saying we're keeping it.
Nola nodded far too excitedly.
But until we decide what's what, I've got kitty litter in the garage. In the bookcase by the hoop.
Why do you have kitty litter?
For the grease. Come on, I taught you that. It gets grease stains out of the driveway.
Nola took off for the garage, her sudden movement startling Dooch, whose rear end spiked in the air, armed with blanks. In the garage, Nola headed for the basketball hoop that Royal got as payment for a fake Canadian passport. It leaned on a rickety wire shelving unit that bent like a palm tree in a hurricane. Nola thought the kitty litter was on the lowest shelf. But when she got there, it was gone. Confused, she checked the other shelves, then checked below the brand new workbench Royal had just bought himself. She even checked behind the stolen stop sign that Royal had illegally taken down at the end of the block. Since no way did they need a four-way stop there, what kind of dumbass rule is that? Still no kitty litter. Glancing around the garage, Nola noticed a few folding chairs and two $400 vacuum cleaners, another trade from an immigrant family, that were blocking the bottom shelves of the white particle board bookcase that Royal used to store industrial packs of laminating sheets. Maybe that was the bookcase he was talking about. With a tug, Nola pulled away the vacuum cleaners. There. Kitty litter. But as she stepped in to pull it off the lower shelf, her foot kicked the bookcase and... Tunk. The toe kick of the bookcase fell forward. Nola knelt to pick it up. Behind it, though, in the narrow space behind the toe kick, there was something back there. Something hidden. Papers. No, not papers, envelopes. A small stack of them. Nola pulled out the stack, which was covered in ancient dust and held together by a green rubber band. They were all addressed to Royal, but the handwriting... The return address. Nola's throat tightened, her windpipe feeling like it was filled with sand. B. LaPointe, Guidry, Texas. Barb LaPointe. Nola's old family. The ones who gave her away, gave her to Royal. Nola tore off the rubber band, flipping through the stack and scanning post dates. 9 years ago, 8 years ago, even one from 7 years ago. These were right after Nola left, after Royal took her. All these years, she thought the LaPointes abandoned her, but they were reaching out. They were writing. Nola's heart punched inside her chest like it was about to burst through her ribcage. Ripping open the first envelope, a bright red one like a valentine, Nola pulled out. It wasn't a card. It was a note, handwritten on white loose-leaf paper. Nola tried reading it, but her eyes, her brain, just seeing the tidy loops of Barb's old handwriting, everything was moving too fast. None of the words made sense. She started again. Dear Royal, so nice meeting you face to face. With such a difficult decision, we know you'll take care of Nola, but... But? Why was there a but? Realized we forgot to collect payment. Payment? Nola tore open the next letter. I'm sure it was just an oversight, but Christmas is coming, so if you could send a check. She tore open another. And another. And another. Each letter growing more insistent. Expect you to keep your promise, Royal. Check. Cash. Money. And that one word Barb used over and over. Payment. Nola's head was spinning, and her heart was deflated, sagging over her lungs, making it impossible to breathe. All these years, Nola thought the LaPointes gave her away so they could give her an improved life, so they were in a better position to help her brother. But now, to read these, they didn't just give her away. They sold her. And worse, Royal bought her. Like property. And apparently he thought so little of her, he never even made the payment. Not that the LaPointes could tell that to anyone. All they had was Royal's word. They could never enforce an illegal agreement like that.
Nola, you find the cat litter or not?
Royal called out, his voice close. Nola stuffed the letters back into place, quickly closing the toe kick and sliding the vacuum cleaners back just like it was. But as she grabbed the kitty litter, behind her, there was a sharp creak of moving floorboards. Nola looked over her shoulder. The doorway was empty. Motes of dust floated in the air, but she could tell. Sometimes you just know. Royal had been standing there. Did he see? Did he know what she'd found? Nola had no idea until later that night when she decided that her best course of action was to go back and grab the old letters. She sat awake half the night, staring up at the ceiling, her new pet, Dooch, curled in a ball at her feet. Nola wasn't moving until she was sure Royal was asleep. At 2:30 a.m., she finally got out of bed, Dooch raising his head at full alert. Quietly as she could, she snuck back to the garage, pulled the vacuum cleaners aside, and once again kneeled at the toe kick. Wedging her fingers in there, she pulled the toe kick down, revealing Royal's secret hideaway. A ball of dust bunnies rolled toward her. But the letters, the proof of what he and the LaPointes had done, all of it was gone. Royal knew. He knew what she'd found. The only question now was, what was he planning as a punishment?
62. Maryland. Today. Tampons and nasal spray. Oh, and a water bottle. And scissors. And duct tape. That's what he needed. An hour ago, after tying a quick tourniquet in the car, Zig raced out of D.C., not stopping until he reached a small town called Mitchellville, Maryland. From there, he picked a CVS a few towns over, and the Mia Casa Motel, chosen because its rooms led out to an exterior walkway right next to the parking lot. Cradling Nola, Zig kicked open the door and was hit by the motel smell of stale cigarettes, sweat, and whatever that Rorschach-shaped stain on the carpet was. With Mia Casa's southwestern theme, every piece of furniture was blonde formica. As Zig pulled down the patchwork top sheets and carefully lowered Nola onto one of the sagging twin beds, she was still in and out of consciousness. At one point, she insisted she was fine, though she was clearly unaware that sudden blood loss caused a rush of the same hormones and endorphins that produce second winds during marathons. Within a minute, she was out cold.
"Doesn't even look that bad. You can barely see it," Sig said, whispering the same lies he told all the fallen service members who came through Dover. Back in mortuary school, Zig's professor warned him not to keep speaking to the dead. The closer you get, the harder it gets, as they say in the funeral industry. But for Zig, there was no other way.
"I'm right here. You hear me?
Right here," he said, cutting off her shirt to get a better look at the deep puncture wound below her clavicle. The blood was dark red.
Good. The darker it was, the less likely it was coming fresh from an artery. Over the years, in the process of cleaning out and rebuilding over 2,000 fallen service members, Zig had become well-trained in every makeshift trick our medics use on the battlefield, and the results that came with them. Puncturing a water bottle with the scissors, he sprayed a jet stream at the wound.
"Just cleaning it out. Best way to stop infection."
Leaning in, he saw that the blood coming from her wound wasn't pumping in a steady heartbeat. It was oozing slowly.
"Even better. Meant her subclavian artery was intact." He checked the pulse in the radial arteries of both her wrists. "Perfect match. Good sign. Blood pressure okay too. No signs of internal bleeding."
"Lucky girl," he told Nola, who just lay there, unconscious.
Gently, Zig turned her on her side to check her back. There were faded scars there, old ones, crisscrossing up her spinal column. These were from years ago, when she was a kid. The only good news was at the top of her shoulder. No exit wound. The bullet was still inside her. Lucky for that, too. If the bullet had burst out, there'd be a far bigger and bloodier mess to deal with. Plus, with bits of bullet inside her.
"TSA is gonna love you at airport metal detectors," Zig said, tearing open the bag of tampons. This would be the hard part.
Cutting a tampon in half, he sprayed it with the Afrin nasal spray, then aimed it directly at the soupy, bloody hole below Nola's collarbone. No anesthetic. Pain was coming.
"If it helps, squeeze my fingers," he said, taking her limp hand in his own. "On 3, 2, 1.
He shoved the tampon deep into Nola's wound. The tampon expanded, instantly absorbing, while the nasal spray did its job, tightening the blood vessels to prevent further bleeding. Nola's whole body shook, like she was jolted from a dream, her eyes still closed.
Sig jumped back, so lost in the moment, so used to being around corpses, he forgot she was alive. In that moment, for the very first time and in the very worst way, it hit Zig that he'd become more accustomed to the dead than the living. It was a thought he wouldn't shake for days. Using his thumbs to stuff the rest of the tampon into place, he sealed the wound with duct tape, then turned his attention to treating and sealing more duct tape that cut on Nola's wrist. As he looked closer, he realized that wasn't the only cut there.
"Oh, Nola, what did you do?" he muttered, eyeing at least 3 other faded pink scars across her wrist.
Unlike the ones on her back, they all ran in the same direction.
How old was she when she got these? 16? 17?
There were so many questions he wanted to ask. About her, about the plane crash, about Operation Blue Book, and especially about Houdini.
My God, she shot and killed Houdini!
But as Zig moved her to the clean bed and pulled the covers up to her chin, one question stood out above all others. Why? Why the hell did that plane go down? Which, of course, led to what? What could possibly be so important about Nola that people were suddenly committing murder? Which naturally led to who? From his pocket, Zig pulled out the bulky military watch that the amazing Caesar had stolen from Houdini. Zig had seen watches like this before, back at Dover, on fallen Special Forces soldiers. The more macho the man, the bigger the watch. But big watches like this, made by a company called Sumto. Special Forces loved Sumtos because they had built in MGRS, the Military Grid Reference System, which, like a high-octane GPS, allowed troops to input digital grid coordinates and find locations to within a few meters as they were moving through the theater of war. Efficient? Absolutely. Safe? That was the issue. Once something had GPS, everyone could learn where you... Oh, Caesar, you cruel old mastermind. Grabbing the landline from the nightstand, Zig started dialing Wags's number. Somewhere in this watch were coordinates. Coordinates that would show every place Houdini had been today. And also, presumably, every other place he'd visited in the last month. Don't, a voice called out. Behind him, Nola fought to sit up in bed, her color pale. Don't do it, she whispered. Whoever you're calling, they'll know where we are. Zig kept dialing. This is someone I trust. You don't know that. He turned, still mid-dial. What are you talking about? Nola sat up, wearing just her bra. She glanced down at her duct tape bandage, eyeing it with approval.
You're supposed to be a smart person, Mr. Zigareski. Have you really not noticed that everywhere you go, Houdini and his crew somehow always know you're coming?
That's not...
Back at Dover, they shipped out Camille's body before you could figure out what was happening. When you went to my old office, they were waiting for you there, too.
They were waiting for you, not me.
What about now? Back in the car, I heard you call 911. You said there was an old magician, Caesar. They killed him, didn't they? You called the paramedics so someone would find him. Don't be blind, Mr. Zigarowski.
I told you. Call me Zig.
Stop with the bullshit charm and pay attention, Mr. Zigarowski. Whatever dumb trap you were planning in that magic shop, Houdini knew. He came there with every intent to put a bullet in that old man's brain. The only thing that didn't go his way was that he thought he'd find you there too.
With a clang, Zig hung up the phone. For a moment he just stood there, staring down at the Sumto watch. Was Nola right? Only one way to find out. He held up the watch. We still need to get someone who can read the grid coordinates in here.
Give me the watch,
Nola insisted. What? Give it to me. Now. For the next 2 minutes, Nola held the Sumto like a stopwatch, clicking the chronograph buttons, the watch beeping like a droid. As Nola scrolled through its on-screen menu, Zig was hit by that same feeling every dad gets when their child grabs their phone or remote control and displays a clear superiority over new technology.
Get a pen,
Nola said, still focused on the watch.
Write this down.
Zig didn't move fast enough. Nola grabbed the Mikasa pen and matching pad of paper from the nightstand. Quickly jotting down some letters and a 10-digit number, she clicked back through the watch's menu, re-entering the digits. A map appeared on screen. There was another beep. Then, Nola made a face. What? What's it say? Zig asked. She looked over at the notepad, then back at the watch, rechecking to make sure she had it right.
According to GPS, this is where Houdini was yesterday.
Is it someplace we know?
I'd say you definitely know it. Based on the time, he landed there last night.
So it's an airport?
Not an airport.
I don't understand. Where do you land that's not an airport?
The one place where he clearly had a friend who could help him get inside. That's how Houdini stayed out of sight, she said,
holding up the watch toward Zig. Zig's eyes went wide. At the bottom of the screen were the letters D-E.
Delaware.
No, that can't be.
But it was. Houdini arrived last night. Hid there right under your nose, Nola explained.
On screen, Zig eyed the familiar outline on the map.
The mortuary. He was in your building, Mr. Zigarowski. At Dover Air Force Base.
63. In the man's ear, the phone rang 3 times. Voicemail. Annoyed, he hung up and dialed again. New number this time. Ring. 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 What are you doing? His associate hissed on the other line. This is my work line. You ignored my call on your cell phone, the man with the wood chipper of a voice said. Don't do that. Will you get over yourself? You and Houdini told me to be smart. I'm being smart. Unless you want me picking up your call in front of half of Dover. There was an announcement from the intercom. People bustled back and forth through the waiting area, most of them with their heads down, scrolling through their phones. It made the man think how much he hated the damn internet. Where are you anyway? Sounds like an airport, his associate said. You promised an update, the man with the wood chipper voice shot back. He had gray hair, the color of smoke, and kept his back to the crowd so no one could get a good look at the fleshy white scar that split his lower lip and ran down to his jaw. I need to know where Zig is. That's our first problem. I haven't heard from him in hours. Then let me give you a hint. Houdini's dead. Zig and Nola are gone. You missed an entire firefight. We sent cleanup in, but it's still a hot damn mess. You have no idea. Remember when you said your magician friend Caesar was all taken care of? He was more hardy than you thought. He's alive, Woodchipper asked. Not anymore. But someone placed a 911 call. Everyone here's saying it sounds a lot like our friend Zig. Did Caesar know anything about you? The man with the wood chipper voice went silent. Now boarding on track 29, the intercom announced overhead. A small crowd of travelers surged for the gate marked track 29. The man with the wood chipper voice barely moved, gripping his phone, his back to them all. Train station, huh? What, you don't like flying? His associate was perceptive, even more than he thought. Just do what we asked, the man growled. I know this isn't easy for you. But if you don't help us find Zig soon, we'll all be... I know the damn consequences, okay? I'm on it. I'll call you back. Without a word, the man with the wood chipper voice hung up the phone and headed for the train. He chose the silent car because, God, he'd had enough slobs barking into their cell phones, clueless to the volume of their own voices. As he finally found a seat, his own phone buzzed with a text message. 6 words. Spotted at a CVS in Maryland. A small grin twisted the fleshy white scar along the man's lip. With a few taps, he composed a new text message to a brand new recipient. We got him.